We're 96.3. Let's get it straight. You're tuned to Food Radio Santa Cruz, and this is Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides. It's 2.5 hours of civil rights chatter, serious discussion, funny songs, melodic melodies, and for the first time in many a moon, call in. Yes, our phone line is operational, everybody. Amazing. My thanks to the miracle technicians who got it going. Phone line number 427-3772. Stay tuned for Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides, and call in. This is 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. This is 2.5 hours of talk, forum, and music around issues of civil rights on the streets. And I hope you stay with me and actually join me at our call-in number, 427-3772. That'll put you directly into the studio. And, hey, we can actually talk together here. We have scheduled interviews with Phil Bear in the Beach Flats. And we also have a proponent. It's actually not accurate. He's not a proponent of the Beach Flats. He is essentially someone who doesn't care whether the Beach Flats program proceeds or not. In fact, he would like to see further development in terms of an Ocean Street bridge. That's the community activist who many consider to be right-wing when he ran. Indeed, he joined the Republican Party and was a part of that party for a number of years, Steve Hartman. Why is he showing up on my show? Well, we believe in a variety of views, and Hartman is nothing if not controversial, so we're going to have an interview with him as well around the Beach Flats and other issues. Hartman's a very contradictory fellow. He was supportive of those serving food to the homeless at the town clock back in the late 80s when it was an illegal operation, and part of that was to prick the conscience and be a burr under the saddle of the progressive majority on the city council, and part of it was his natural compassionate feelings for people who are hungry, which put him on the other side of Marty Wormhout, interestingly enough, our new supervisor, or our actually no longer new, our uncontested ongoing supervisor for this district, whose positions on a number of local issues I now support, but when she was mayor, she was a horror and a terror regarding homeless people, and there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And there's one action after another, whether it be arresting an activist looking for blankets at her door at 2 in the morning on the coldest evening of the year, or spurring the police to come out and arrest people for serving free food, or refusing to set up a food program because she was offended by a flyer. Wormhout was the worst. That's perhaps past history. Hard to say, because I haven't seen any major initiatives for protection of homeless rights at the county level, but actually Gary Patton, previous Board of Supervisors member, pioneered that situation by passing a roadside resting law back in 1985 and fighting off and fending off a county camping ban, which various conservatives tried to pass in the middle of the 80s, and that ban was never passed. There are limited camping bans in the county in certain small areas, but you need to have a public hearing on them, and hence most of the county is free of a camping ban, thanks to Gary Patton and the other two supervisors of the time who stood with him. However, the sheriffs, as you may know, those of you who listen to this show, the deputies who patrol the county regularly misinform homeless people or people who are sleeping in vehicles that it is illegal for them to do that, frightening them and intimidating them and forcing them to perhaps end what might be a necessary sleeping situation and a legal one when they are, because it is legal to roadside rest, as Patton puts it in his ordinance. And instead, the deputies are informing people that they can't do that either. This was confirmed by the Peace and Freedom Party 2 years ago when we made extensive calls to verify that the sheriffs were lying to people about the law. I have to say lying because I can't assume they're that stupid after we informed them of it. But indeed, bigotry stoops to that kind of thing. And the way that people without power will be obliviously dismissed and set aside is traditional. And it happens with a lot of other groups. Shouldn't be surprised that it happens with poor and homeless people. We're also hoping today to have a visit from Jane Hagstrom. Jane is actually the head of one of the psychiatric programs up in Berkeley, and we will grill her on her situation around forced incarceration and forced drugging. And we'll also go back a bit into her past, because she was at one time head of the Santa Barbara Homeless Coalition and was working with a group of people who are probably some of the most prominent in the country in breaking new ground for homeless rights, the right to vote, the first sleeping ban overturned by homeless and community action that happened in Santa Barbara in 1986. So we'll hope to talk to her about how all that went. She was a confidant of the late Mitch Snyder, a famous, deservedly famous national homeless activist who committed suicide in 1990. He was able to, for a while, establish the right to shelter in Washington, D.C. So hopefully these are issues we will cover. Of course, those who regularly follow the show know that we don't always cover what we say we're going to cover, and we have fallen short, as the phrase goes, announcing things that we don't actually put on the air. Although, in my own defense, I'll say that stuff usually comes on later at a future show. This is a show that's broadcast twice a week. It's Sunday at 11 o'clock, and we go till 1:30 in the afternoon, followed by the Reckless, whose show often kind of carries on some of the topics we've been discussing, particularly if they interest her. And we also have a show at 6 o'clock on Thursday evenings, runs from 6 to 8, somewhat shorter. Again, we follow the same kinds of things. Attempts by the Berkeley City Council to ban people sitting on the avenue. The experiences of people in Arizona, we're hoping to have a little bit more from that today. We went to Arizona back in June, did some traveling around. We got a report from Prescott. Actually, Prescott has passed some more nasty laws, and if we don't talk about that this show, we'll talk about it next show. A couple of brief announcements I want to make. Coming up on Wednesday, 6 p.m., I guess that's today is the 22nd, or 23rd, rather. Today's the 23rd. We got the 24th, 25th. It looks like the 26th. At 6 p.m., there's going to be the first at least the first that I've heard of, City Council Candidates Forum. And as you may know, there are 8 City Council candidates running for 3 seats. And so it's really one of the smallest collections of candidates ever running for a City Council that I've ever heard of. And 3 of them are good. 4 of them are good, actually. Pat Clark, Tim Fitzmaurice, Chris Crone, and who is the 4th? Gosh, I'm sure I'll remember his name in a moment. Keith Sugar. And I mainly say they're good because I know how they stand on the beach flats issue, and I'm hoping that they take similarly positive stands around basic civil rights for the poor. Pat Clark has certainly taken that stand. He hosted the benefit for the homeless that we had at the Veterans Hall back in May, which was sort of subverted by Slow Gherkin, which had agreed to play and then 5 minutes before its showtime walked out. Unfortunately, they're being sued, I understand, according to homeless activist David Silva. But Clark is a good candidate, and the other 3 have been very strong and forceful talking about the rights of low-income people in beach flats, and they're part of the community I'm concerned about. I've got to admit to more of a concern with those with less money than those with more. So they're all going to be showing up at this forum on the 26th, on Wednesday at Loudoun Nelson at 6 o'clock, and it's going to be a forum run by SCAN and Labor, and I think there's one other group, maybe it's UCSC, where there'll be endorsements. I heard about this from activist Silva, and I encourage you to come to it with lots of questions about these, about how do they stand on police misconduct, how do they stand on a Citizens Police Review Board that's been crippled by appointees who won't even leave their offices to do anything, who are all set to rubber stamp the most serious police apparent police misconduct without any kind of investigation. I speak, of course, of the Happy John Dine shooting. The Brian Andrus case, of course, is another instance that there was a lot of controversy around, but they have done nothing on, even though both of these cases involve discharge, nearly lethal or lethal discharge of a firearm by our local police officers against individuals who were, well, Andrus was not unarmed. He had a baseball bat, and a review of the court records now reveals he admits to having hit an officer in the little finger with the baseball bat. The officer claims his head would have been hit if he didn't cover it with his hand. He hit one officer on the finger and one officer in the chest with this aluminum baseball bat and was promptly rewarded with 4 bullets. That was on Button Street in March. And we're going to be having a longer report on that issue based upon documents that came out in the preliminary hearing and the police reports, which were delayed 4 months, count them, 4 months before they reached the public defender, or I should say the private defender, John Thornton, who's defending, he's the attorney, defending Brian Andrus in this case. Really questionable activity, as usual, from the office of D.A.R. Denner and Police Chief Steve Belcher. We also, of course, you may remember, played the Happy John Dine transmission tape that we finally got from Belcher, the uncensored version. That was a couple months ago of the police radio traffic right before and after Dine was shot dead by Officer Connor Carey with his partner, Officer Over, also with gun out on the scene. And the questions raised by that, not so much by that shooting, but by the failure to do an independent investigation with public hearings around that shooting, continue to haunt us. Similarly, we've been covering the Vaughn shooting down in Seaside, and we'll be having a report on that. But again, come to this forum at 6 p.m. at Loudoun Nelson on Wednesday. You get your first look at the rogues gallery of candidates that are going to be running for our own Santa Cruz City Council in November. Really important local issues are here at stake that affect you and that can be affected by you if you get down there. And if you have more questions, again, about anything that comes up on the air, you can call me. The studio line is really, really open. We have a studio line, and it's here. And I invite someone to call in just to show that you can do it, just to empower the rest of you here. The studio line is 427-3772 or 427-FRSC. That's Free Radio Santa Cruz. FRSC, 427-3772. That's 96.3 FM you're listening to. Free Radio Santa Cruz here. And I guess what we're going to begin with is a report on the beach flats from that, I've got to call him an expert because he has steeped himself in the environmental impact report. He's an activist because he's been holding meetings one after another at his house, turning out public statements, really bringing the issue to public attention. His letter actually was printed recently in the Sentinel, or the Urinal as it's more properly known, the Santa Cruz Urinal, our daily joke newspaper. It comes out. And let's hear Phil and what he had to say that would update us on the beach flats. Okay, I'm on the line with community activist Phil Baer. Hi, Phil.
Hey, Rob.
And Phil, here we are on Saturday night, kind of looking over the last week. I know that I last saw you on Wednesday evening when Jane Baer, your wife, and fellow activists gave us a tour of the beach flats, letting us see exactly which housing was due for demolition. And then you had quite a collection of folks together at your own household in a meeting conducted almost entirely in Spanish with some English translation, talking a lot about how the housing, the housing needs of people were essentially going to be ignored in this upcoming beach flats redevelopment, Third Street realignment. Any impressions of that meeting that you want to convey?
Well, that is the most, far more local beach flats residents than ever attended any of the meetings held by the city promoting the plan.
There were about 20 or 30 people in the room, including some city council wannabes like Pat Clark, Linda Steinow. And then you had former city council member Jane Yokoyama, whom I call Jane Hokey Mama, mainly because I wonder, in fact, I found myself wondering at that meeting, she was kind of billed as part of the situation, and you seemed to be favorably disposed to what she had to say. You introduced her, but I got the impression she wasn't, she, for example, refused to sign the petition that said that that she simply opposed the beach flats plan. What did she say from your point of view, and was it satisfactory to you?
Yes, I was pleased by what she had to say. It was in Spanish, and my Spanish is a long way from perfect, but as I understand, she was basically telling the Beach Flats Latinos to be very careful about what was happening, warning them of some of the potential pitfalls, you know, saying basically that they couldn't just proceed entirely on faith and believe everything that they were being told, all of the assurances of replacement housing and so on.
Well, I actually did hear her say that she in essence felt that Kennedy and Rotkin and Hernandez, who claimed they went house to house, were not telling the truth.
That seemed about what I got to.
However, she also said, and I guess this is what disturbed me, that she was talking about the need to know the law and to be very specific and very careful. And of course, what disturbed me is I guess her suggestion, which isn't, you know, of itself a bad one, that people get together and go to city council and, you know, present their concerns specifically. Obviously, that's always a good idea, except that under the present time schedule for this plan, and given the content of the city council and its inclinations at the moment, I mean, not that one shouldn't go to city council, but my thought was unless people are engaging in large weekly protest demonstrations that produce a large media, you know, attention and focus, the city council is going to ignore what you're going to say, even if you have a lot of people saying it because it's so late in the game. What's your reading on this?
Oh, that is certainly the conventional wisdom that I think most of us who have been observing this particular city council over the last couple of years would assume. I'm somewhat optimistic. I really think this thing is swelling. That is to say, the public resistance to this thing is really gone just within the last week or two. well beyond what it was prior to that time. I'm referring in particular to Marty Warmhout speaking very strongly before the Planning Commission and other formats against this plan. And
when did she speak on that, Phil?
She spoke, when was that? At least a week ago, the second of the two Planning Commission final readings on the plan. She spoke at some length, and I thought very persuasively about several aspects, major components of the plan, critical.
Did she seek modification of the plan, or did she seek to have the plan essentially put in the deep freeze until after the election?
Well, the modifications that she seemed to be suggesting would be so great as to constitute a revision, a scaling back at the very least. She was all over the huge amount of retail commercial space that was proposed in the plan, pointed out that would be in direct competition with the downtown and very possibly disastrous in terms of its potential impact on downtown businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And was also very critical of the amusement park expansion. Strong statement, you know, unequivocal criticism, as was Gary Patton's
editorial
in the last Sunday, I believe it was.
Sunday before last, yeah.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
So last Sunday, we, of course, had the pleasure of reading Daryl Darling's response, as well as the Sentinel's editorial supporting the Beach Flats plan.
Yes, very disappointing.
And you're listening to Phil Baer, a community activist in the Beach Flats, attacking the proposed Beach Flats redevelopment, Third Street realignment, La Bahia housing, but not necessarily for the Beach Flats people program, and I guess retail expansion. It's a whole Seaside Company giveaway that we've talked about many times on the air. We're going to hear more of Phil, but I'm going to kind of break up the show a bit in honor of a visiting activist or former activist. I'm not sure, she still may be an activist and she may be listening to this show. Her name is Jane Hagstrom, as I mentioned earlier, and did incredible work. She wrote her PhD thesis on the whole struggle around the sleeping ban in Santa Barbara, and then worked with the Santa Barbara Homeless Coalition for a number of years trying to get basic rights assured and established for people in Santa Barbara. That's a continuing struggle down there. I'm going to play a little bit of stuff that's going on the streets, a few interviews from Pacific Avenue, and we're going to return to Phil Baer and his analysis of the Beach Flats, which I think Baer's analysis is very important, and I want to get back to it, but I also want to break it up with specific kinds of interviews that might be more, I guess that folks who are not following this particular Beach Flats dialogue might understand more readily. Let's go down to Pacific Avenue before we return to Phil and hear what's happening downtown.
Down here on the street, it's Tuesday afternoon, and
the radio, you know, right on.
We're talking to that man on the street, Rainbow. Rainbow, you've been you've seen some interesting things recently. What we remember the woman Jeannie who kind of rides around on her bike. She has a sort of a curvature spine problem with her back.
Sure. You might describe her a little more, how so viewer listeners might know.
Yeah, I think you may have seen our listeners if you're familiar with Pacific Avenue. This is an older woman who kind of rides on her bike downtown. She actually has a physical problem that puts her in pain a lot of the time.
Osteoporosis,
and she's bent over a lot. And Rainbow, you saw her in what appeared to be a strange situation where a merchant didn't like her appearance or something. Or?
Well, as far as I know, I'm standing about 100 feet away from where she was at. She's smoking. Every day she does the same thing. She drinks her coffee and smokes a cigarette by the Pacific Cookie Company in front of there every day. 20 years, I don't know, I've seen it, whatever, for years. And then she's not doing nothing. You know, we're sitting there, we're not really looking at her. All of a sudden the cops start hassling her, you know. And then some old man got mad about the whole thing too. He goes, what are you doing to her? She's done nothing wrong. And then she's right, and then they have her signing a ticket. That's when I walked over to see what's going on. And she's even going into her osteoporosis convulsion, if you want to call it, or whatever. She's moving as she's signing the ticket. I mean, I wish I would have had a video of it, but But the two cops are already looking red in the face. They already looked embarrassed.
What are the names of the cops?
It's the young... You probably know them. It's the young cop with the kind of greasy hair. Kind of the good-looking one. The chicks are always going, "Hey, baby, nice buns." Yeah, that guy. You can't miss him. And then he's usually pretty... Not that bad of a guy. He's one of the... Shows a few human qualities, but man... But him and the other guy were embarrassed, and the old man's hounding them. He goes, what did the old woman do? She did nothing. You know, like, and they're looking right at her, you know, and then they asked him if he had a problem with that. He said yes. You know, so he started yelling at the cops, you know, and they let him go, you know, but she had a ticket, and I haven't seen her since. I'm in Civic Mall. So they're trying to keep her from the mall.
Did you see the process of the ticket? Do you know what the ticket was for?
No. That's what I'd like to know. Because I saw no offense. No, she does ride her bike a lot of times the wrong way down the street. It might even be dangerous on the bike when she's on her bike. But standing on the side of the street, basically just not looking,
Santa Cruz?
Yeah, just looking too old and decrepit, maybe, for consumers, you know, or scaring them away. I have a feeling might be able to blame... I should move away from this guy a bit. I should just move away from him. I feel like I'm even kind of... Pacific Cookie. I don't want to bother him. I'm not trying to walk on his... David Susskind here, ABC Sports.
Well, do you have anything further, Rainbow, you wish to report on this situation?
But to make a
long story.
All I know is I'd like to find out if any of the listeners out there have seen any sign of her or know of this ticket, what it's about.
Okay. Well, if you do, give a call to 423-HUFF. If you know what this ticket in front of the Pacific Cookie Company down on Pacific Avenue. What day was it?
Four days.
It's been 3 days.
Like Saturday, Sunday, Friday.
Saturday or Sunday, I believe it was.
Right. This last weekend. Today, of course, is the 18th, so it'll be the 16th or the 15th, something like that. All right, and of course, if you have a problem yourself on downtown with one of the friendly hosts or the...
What's about Over?
Oh, yeah, Officer Over, again, I saw across the street...
This guy here has had problems with him, too. Maybe you might even want to... I'm just saying, if enough people start talking about this guy, maybe we can get rid of him.
That would be nice. He's been on the wall endless period of time. Yes, of course, now you're completely anonymous.
I'm afraid to say my thing. I felt nervous before.
So Officer Over, have you had any... positive or negative experiences with it?
Just got complaining talking about it.
Well, if it's an honest complaint, yeah.
Like on the radio.
I don't want to put myself in jeopardy, so I'm not going to say anything about Officer Over. Sorry.
That's okay. An honest expression of opinion here on the Pacific.
Iceland.
We're talking about actually...
I don't like his trip, man. He's like evil. He's a sadist. He's got many complaints. Many, many complaints against him. I don't know how, he's got a brother that's in the FBI, is what I've heard, which gives him a little clout, you know what I mean, a high up. His brother's like a big time in the FBI, like a sergeant or something, you know, he's not just a beginning. So I think he's pulling strings, because that guy has been around, like basically been a rookie for 2-3 years. Why is he still in the mall, walking around?
Well, pilot training takes longer for some, you know.
I think if you get enough people around town to start realizing, I mean, I've even talked to a downtown host, I won't describe him, but the real guy, and I never heard him talking about a year ago, talking about Over, and the other cops didn't want to be on his beat with him, didn't even want to be his partner a year ago, because he had so much dirt on his record. Huh? Is there such thing as a quota? Do they need a quota before they aren't a rookie anymore, you know what I mean, like they have to have a certain amount of arrests?
I don't know you need to talk to some police officer after, you know, schmoozing with him. Or possibly the Citizens Police Review Board could answer that question. If you take it to them, they might be able to give you an answer.
I don't know. Something's got to change with Officer Over. He's evil. Got an evil bent.
Yeah, I don't understand that his behavior is much improved, though I do understand that if you stand up to him, apparently he tends to back off. That's what I hear.
One night I started kind of... Get away from him.
One night you...
Yeah, one night I, thinking of a... what is that?
All right, well, here we are in the very corner and door of Double Rainbow, about 15 or 20 to 7 on Tuesday afternoon, after Feed the People seems to have fed most of the people. It's traditional peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And let me put in a plug here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 for the group Feed the People, which is a modest group, used to serve soup and have lots of food down in the mall 5 days a week before they were essentially driven away by harassment of Feed the People activist Sean Alini, or shit kicker Sean, as I've called him. Sean is still facing charges of, I think it's furnishing drugs to a minor and sexual misconduct with a minor. Nasty sounding charges, unless you know the history of the police department and Sean Alini. Feed the People feeds every Monday and Tuesday at 5:30 in front of Double Rainbow on Pacific Avenue, and I invite you to go down there and eat with them, serve with them, see if you can help them. We have an incoming call, and caller, keep calling. We're about to answer your call. And also, you can give them a call at 425, that's Feed the People, 3333, 425-FEED.
You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, extra, extra, did you read the news today?
Tell me.
In the Senile. Oh, wait, get out your violin quick, because the housing crunch is squeezing the students. A big sob story about how our poor students are forced to pay $1,000 a month sometimes to secure housing in this town. $1,000 a month. I wish I could pay $1,000 a month for anything. Probably easier to pay for something when you got $1,000 a month. Two things. There's that, the housing crunch squeezes the students. Who gives a fuck? There's a letter from Kitten Reynolds.
Ah, yes. Kitten Reynolds, the homeless woman who...
Who's ostracized simply because she's homeless.
Actually, of course, we've talked about this woman, a former activist.
Because she's a piece of human trash. A former activist? I don't know. Agent provocateur? No, I'm probably not an agent because she couldn't pass the test, but definitely a provocateur.
Well, I know that this claim that the student housing is, there is, of course, one of the problems, and the reason we don't have housing is because of the proximity of the university and the failure of the university to build the housing that it supposedly was supposed to build.
Exactly.
And the fact that the city council has caved in on that issue year after year, as it seems to now be caving in around the Seaside Company and will be destroying more housing.
There's them bulldozers in the beach spots. Hey, I heard them talking about, the people don't want to be relocated. Well, hey, even if they don't want to be relocated, where are they going to relocate these people to? In the beach flats thing. We got students can't find housing. I know me and my friends have become homeless every year for the last several years. Like every time, coincidentally, it's when the students come back to town that landlords evict everybody and paint their houses and double the rent.
Exactly.
So, we got all this housing crunch going on, and we're going to tear down some more low-cost housing. Makes a lot of sense to me.
And create more people who will become criminal under the sleeping ban.
Yeah, so where's this relocation going to go to from the people in the beach flats? Where are we going to relocate them? Are we going to send them to Big Mountain, or what?
Fresno, I think, is the suggestion of some council members.
Fresno! Oh, that's nice.
Actually,
people don't have lives here have a right to live here.
Well, as they more discreetly put it, those who cannot afford the high rents here must find opportunities somewhere else.
Aren't they renting right now?
They are renting right now, but as we know, their housing is needed for the greater vision of the business to be brought in by Charlie Canfield's Seaside Company Beach Boardwalk Expansion. So, of course, this is not... It's a question of how done a deal it is, because it is true that none of the council members, well, except for Campbell, who favor this, even if all three council seats were won by pro... Well, that's not true. If all three seats were won by pro-Beach Flat activists, then you would have a council majority to turn back this measure. But I think that's really unlikely, because... You're going to get at least one conservative who will win one of these three seats that are coming up in November, and you will still have the redevelopment majority on the city council. We're talking Kennedy, Hernandez, Rodkin, Matthews. That's the majority. Campbell will be leaving, but she will probably be replaced by another conservative.
You can have all your majorities and minorities. Bottom line is money in this town. The side that has the money wins.
Money is certainly what runs American politics, it seems to me.
He's running Santa Cruz. Didn't used to be that way when I was here, but, that Santa Cruz is dead.
Unless people rise up, and those rare occasions when they rise up and speak with strong voices, then money has to kind of beat a retreat.
A lofty dream.
Indeed. You're a radio broadcaster, I recognize, and we are, of course, talking to Phil Free here.
I will not confirm nor deny that.
Those who know your famous voice need no further confirmation. Have you got any reports from the streets on what's going on down in Pacific that might be helpful for us trying to get a grip on, let's see, say, we know that, now that redevelopment is almost largely finished down there. Well, I mean, there are a couple of spots left. What's happening with young people and poor people down on Pacific? Do you still play down there?
You can't. Yeah, I play down there as much as possible. You can't gather in groups of more than three for a certain undetermined amount of time, or the police will be given a new spot on their beat to stand for several hours of the day, or just to hang out, or they won't come and beat people, but they're actively deploying the police to just stand around where people tend to congregate. So they don't congregate there anymore. For some reason, people that congregate don't want to congregate with police. I don't know if it's their breath. I don't know if, they didn't use the right kind of deodorant. But they just don't want to hang out with police. So what they do is they just, send the police to just be wherever they want people not to be.
Mm-hmm. Now, two years ago, you made a very strong statement against the Downtown Association's give a hand up, not a hand out, real change, not spare change. I call it the hoax program, where they were giving out little pieces of paper describing discontinued or inadequate services and urging customers and residents and the public generally not to give money to spare changers.
Yeah. They said that phase two is supposed to be happening by now, and that if we resisted phase two, that they would have the police meet with force, I believe is what they said in the paper. I'm waiting for phase two and for the police to come down with force, mm-hmm, and rip my sign from my hand.
Well, what's happening? Have you seen any? I haven't seen too many of those give a hand up, not a hand out, or whatever, a real change, not spare change signs.
Nobody gave a fuck about their stupid, silly little program. They're trying it in the Castro in San Francisco now.
The hot cookie thing.
Yeah.
Hot cookie is the
create change, not hand it out program. Just as catchy as Santa Cruz came up with.
Again, this is a gentrification program, right, Phil? It aims at telling the, and kind of mobilizing a kind of a mean spirit against people on the streets with the notion that if people don't get spare change, that somehow they will go somewhere, anywhere else.
You know, something really funny about the mean spirit issue. It seems that as soon as a town allows it, lets it in, and allows themselves to be open to bigotry, that all kind of hate comes in. Santa Cruz was very truly a magical place at one time. And since that hate and bigotry has been allowed to fester, we have all manifestations of hate down on our street now. We have skinheads, Klan members, and gang shootings now.
What street is that, Phil?
Pacific Avenue.
Uh-huh.
Pacific Avenue. It's a strange thing, where they run off all the street kids. Now crack dealers and heroin dealers move in to take over the territory. I don't know which side they work on, but it sure seems like they followed the DTA. Go right where the DTA sends them.
The Downtown Association actually has its own candidate running in this election, Linda Steinau. She's long been the head of the Downtown Association. I don't know if she is now. I think she resigned recently.
Well, they're all candidates for the DTA, whether they have cards, they're card-carrying members or not. That's who they serve.
And she also, I guess, Donna Murillo, another kind of famous downtown merchant type person, is, I guess, the new chair of the Homeless Community Resource Center Board, which is the new merged board which controls the homeless services out on River and Highway 1. Have you gotten any reports from how things are going with the community house or the Homeless Community Resource Center?
Not any reports, but I was hanging out a couple weeks ago, and is it Karen Gillette?
Karen Gillette is
that's her name. She was pulling out of the place in her car.
She's the executive director of both of those programs.
And she was getting cussed at, spit at by the people that are not allowed into the shelter, that have to hang out on the sidewalk to see their friends or anything. Mm. This was right after she announced that she's quitting her job.
No, really. Well, of course, she her announcement, of course, was followed by a return to the job at a higher salary, with her critics removed from the board.
Imagine that. Well, I'm sure she had a better job somewhere else after she kissed ass for the DTA for a year. Job offers are abounding somehow. Somehow, the door for money for her is wide open, but I don't see anybody else getting any of that.
Well, I did find it strange that a woman who has supposedly been, you know, the lead person in trying to expand homeless services would kind of enter a deal with the downtown association with this in supporting a program that encourages people not to give to the poor.
Well, not just that. She joined a program to speak out against any type of opposition, not just to support their programs, but she very specifically came out in every report and said, now we have to do something, but we have to not do it in an activist kind of way. That's almost a direct quote. And that type of thing was her whole campaign, was to speak up against anybody that opposed the way Santa Cruz handles the homeless problem. And thereby, she got cash from the status quo.
We also know, of course, that she has never publicly supported ending the sleeping ban. Her board has never taken a position on it. Her board may now be holding open meetings. I don't know. It's real hard for me to get information about that. But in the past, her board has refused to hold open meetings. Specifically, you know, she's been very quite candid in the Metro and said it's to exclude me personally, which I find kind of amusing and sort of irrelevant. But she's also, I mean, it's interesting, the programs that she heads were begun by protests, the kind of activism that she now, of course, rejects. And we see this in a, you know, I guess you see this with politicians everywhere and people
like
who
like Rotkin.
Yeah, people who were once activists who are now part of the establishment, and perhaps we should sort of accept it. But it certainly should be understood that that is what is happening, and that indeed that we still need this process of real activism to change what is fundamentally completely inadequate. I mean, when 500 to 1,500 homeless people per night have access to, what, 30 places, 30 legal, there are 30 legal spaces for 500 to 1,500 people each night, it's pretty strange.
Well, at least an activist is going to come out and have the guts to take a stance. She doesn't come out and take a stance openly, but she takes a stance covertly. I mean, she never came out with a statement of whether or not she supported ending the camping ban, or the sleeping ban, I should say. But she actively fought against anybody that was fighting the sleeping ban. And she put most of her effort outside, or more effort than the homeless issue, dealing with the shelter. More of her effort was put into fighting the activists. So therein lies your answer whether or not she supported it. She just didn't have guts enough to make an official proclamation.
You know, about a month ago, we heard a report that Needle Exchange was being threatened by Sergeant Colleen McMahon.
Needle Exchange has had a very specific policy put out towards it at a DTA meeting. I read it in their own newsletter. They're very actively coming out against Needle Exchange.
DTA, of course, is the Downtown Association.
It's in their newsletter that they're having special meetings about that. They had a whole big issue about the heroin problem. And the heroin problem, apparently the way to solve it is to shove it off over to the river levee or out of sight, out of mind, will all be okay.
Well, dirty needles will result in ultimately perhaps fewer heroin addicts if they die fast enough. So maybe that's the mentality. What do you think?
Of course, you know, like the homeless or anything else, you know, shovel them off where they can die in quiet.
Of course, they may take a few people with them, and there are those who, however, maybe we call them misguided liberals or something, who believe that this is a public health problem that concerns the entire community. Even if you don't like the young people, if you've decided to cut them off from your community and say, that if you use heroin or methamphetamine or anything of that sort, we want to have nothing to do with you, you're in a different status. Still, that kind of, if you get HIV, you know, this can be spread now by other means, and it seems that as a community, we would want to encourage people to use safe needles. It's been shown nationally to be effective. Is the Downtown Association so blind or so stupid? What is their problem?
We could go on and on forever about their problems. Anything that's not conducive to making money is their problem. I don't know, maybe people that look like they're on heroin, you know, they might ask for change in there. You know, it gets into that whole taking too much change away from the businesses. You know, it's change that people might go in and spend on a trinket somewhere.
How have you been treated downtown? I know that you and Skidmark Bob, as musicians, were getting quite a bit of flack from merchants like Alibaba.
I haven't had too much problems with Alibaba. I've had plenty of... Complaints. I had six cops show up, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, and gaggled around for 20 minutes, and they didn't give me a ticket.
This was in front of Cottontails?
Yeah, this was.
I think that was actually a couple months ago, and I remember I came by there, and I was making a few inquiries at the time.
And since then, I've noticed a trend, shall we say. They don't want to deal with me. They don't want to come over near me and be subject to my ridicule, I guess. I don't know. Cops avoid me in the singing situation, and quite frankly, a couple times they just haven't shown up to a complaint call or two. Nothing.
You know, that is a very effective means. I want to encourage people in the audience to consider using that. If the police begin to bother you on the street, what I tend to do is I tend to make a public production of it, not with an attempt to physically challenge the police at all, but simply to inform the public that this is how their, you know, $20 or $30 or $40 an hour on police time is being spent, with four or five or six cops going after someone for a bicycle ticket or a sitting on the sidewalk ticket or a playing music in front of a closed-up store, but that's supposed to be illegal anyway ticket. So yeah. I think that just getting very vocal about it in a very kind of almost a humorous but loud and clearly audible way is effective.
You'll get ostracized for it. I mean, you know, you'll be able to walk down the street and get run for warrants for the rest of your life for walking down the street, and you have cops constantly stop you, harass you when you're out of the public view. But one thing I've definitely learned in this town, the only people I've not seen have their civil rights.